Dieter and Hutch with you for week three of the National Football League season. 49ers and Cardinals going on Sunday at Levi's Stadium, where it will be apparently hot. Jake, I don't know if you've caught word. The people are freaking out because it's going to be hot in the South Bay in September, as if that's a new development, my friend.
Yeah, it's important to take all the change out of your pockets. And if you're wearing any of those...
I've literally never heard that statement. Is that like an old East Coast? Is that something that like Ben Franklin once said? Like, if it's a hot day, take the change out of your pockets.
I just remember hearing about people that sat in the stands and they're like, I had some change in my pockets and it was burning my thigh. And if you're wearing those beautiful black jerseys that they're selling for, I don't know what, I assume $180 a pop. That's my guess.
Can I throw a prediction at
hydrate?
You?
Hydrate? Yeah.
Definitely hydrate. Great call there. I'm just going to get right into the predictions. These white jerseys that they're wearing are going to look fucking stupid. It's going to look fucking stupid. They're going to wear a white jersey at home. I believe it's the first time they've ever done it.
Is that right?
And it's going to look fucking stupid. The Cardinals are going to be wearing red at Levi's Stadium. And I feel like it's going to be an ick with these white jerseys at home that will not be shaken. And I think they're doing it like two more times after this.
This is this goes back to a prediction. I grew up in New Jersey, for anyone who didn't know, and we'd watch the Giants. And my mom was a Giants fan. And she was like, I hate when the Giants wear their white jerseys because they just look soft. And it's like similar color scheme as the Niners when they wear the whites. It's the same white and red. And it just like, it looked bad. Something about the pants too. They just looked weak in the white jerseys, and she always hated it.
I'm with you. It's the gray pants with the white jerseys does not have any seriousness to it.
The gray pants was tough.
It looks like something an accountant wears to work. And then, it's kind of soft for the Niners to be wearing white at home. I'm not going to lie to you. It feels a little soft. I know that, you know, Demo's out here saying there's no such thing as bad weather. By the way, it's going to be like 83. Calm down. There's no such thing as bad weather, only soft people.
Right.
And yet, here's your team being like, oh no, the heat absorption of red is too much for us to handle. Like, my prediction, and you can read into that prediction, you can extrapolate that one out, is that the white jerseys at home will be a regrettable situation, and that people will blame that. I think it's just...
Oh, 100%.
Turn everyone off. Do you have any predictions? Oh.
I do have some predictions.
What do you got?
Okay, number one. Mykal Williams will get his first career sack on a scramble cleanup that would otherwise be about a 15-yard gain.
Nice. This feels like a Mykal Williams game, like one way or another, because this game is going to be all for the Niners, defensively, it's going to be all about setting the edge. And we've seen so many times in the past, early season Kyler, which is very different than late season Kyler, as we know, that if you take the cheese on the read option, if you get fooled by the bootleg, that squirrely little shit's gone. He's done. He'll take you for everything you're worth, and then he's going to do a little cheeky slide right in your face. So, that's what it sounds like when he runs. Whoa. I don't know if you
Yeah,
like
I think you're right. I think you're right. I didn't need to hear that. I'm going to be haunted by that sound for a while, but
as well you should be. You don't know about the Moomins, my friend. Wait until you have kids and you find out about Moomins and how half of them make that sound.
Oh god.
Yeah. Shout out all the dads out there. They know, especially the Swedish ones. It's the Mykal Williams game. He is probably the best edge setter that the Niners have had since Nick Bosa has been on this team.
I don't think that's even a hot take at all. Like, I think that's pretty clearly the case.
Let's call him acquaintance at this juncture. It's been a minute. Nate Tice put out a great stat the other day. He got the fine folks at True Media to do some on-off stats for him. Mykal Williams, I'm just going off the top of my head here, but the numbers were nice and round for me. On the field, when he's on the field, the opponent's success rate on rushes is 25%, which to translate is bad.
Right.
And when he is off the field, and I think that's like 20, 21 snaps, when he is off the field, their rush success rate is 66%, which to translate is very good. I'm starting to see a trend.
Success rate, I think, is like something like 4 yards plus on non third down runs, and then third down, it's like getting a first down, something like that.
Everybody, I think, judges it differently. I don't think there's right. an empirical thing, but the point is that's a
40% gap on and off the field.
You are a outstanding run stopping team when Mikel Williams, number 98, is on the field, and we saw exactly what that meant in that game against the Saints, where you put a tight end on him, he one hands him, and then gets Alvin Kamara in the backfield, or just rocking a guard.
Yeah, you know,
take him off. Whew, a little different.
I think it's awfully interesting that like anyone who like knew football and has like coached or evaluated talent is like, yeah, that stuff travels. Like run game stuff travels, and then. Plenty of people were like, no,
it's just not cool enough.
I'm not using Larry as a straw man.
Here.
Go for it.
I'm really not using Larry as a straw man, but he is an avatar for this entire rule of thought. We love Larry. We have a lot of respect for Larry. Larry was very wrong about Mikel Williams. We were very right. That all said, all season last year was bitch about how this team can't stop the run. All offseason, if you had your head on straight, all you did was bitch, and rightfully so, about how this team needed to stop the run. And then they go out with pick number 11 and take a 20-year-old who can immediately stop the run and who has the physical traits to develop, like pretty much all of them, outside of like one Abdul Carter a year, can develop into possibly an elite-level pass rusher because of his physical traits. And everyone's like, oh, boring, I don't know. Meanwhile, this guy immediately steps in week one and stops the run, steps in week two and stops the run, and we're complaining?
It's funny because I remember in the press conference, someone asked, like, we were talking to Tariq Ahmad and the whole, like, you know, evaluation scouting staff, and somebody asked essentially, like, he doesn't always pop off the tape, but, like, what'd you guys think? And he's like, he pops off the tape. Wow. It's just like, here's the thing. It's like, if you're not watching the tape, if you're just watching like the game copy and you're like, oh, he got a pressure.
They're not even watching that. They're watching YouTube
and
highlights.
Even if you did, he did pop off the tape. It's just awesome. Like it was so clear that he provided like a level of force again while being injured on a injured ankle all year long,
yeah.
Playing in. I just couldn't believe that people were underselling that. Anyway.
I'm still not over it. Crazy pills. It felt like
he's just so clearly like, not to use the meme, but literally built different.
he literally is. This is the Mikel Williams game. I'm with you. Him getting the sack is big, but like,
it's not even predicting a good sack. That's a cleanup sack, but
the Leonard Floyd. I'll play devil's advocate on our own thing here, right? Like we can also be clear about this. They're going to go with heavy personnel. I think, forgive me here. Sorry. I've been up since 3:30. Paris Johnson is about as good of a tackle as there is in football right now.
Yeah. He looks and they just have Kelvin awesome. Beecham as their backup now.
Yeah. That's cool. I don't like the inside of their line, if I'm being frank, but you got Jonah Williams and Paris Johnson. They got Paris Johnson. So good. He's high on the running because any Cardinal that's good is high in the running for this of being one of the most underrated players in football.
Right.
Like Buda Baker is the most underrated player in football. And the problem is he plays for the Cardinals. I'm not going to get into whole fan base stuff. Like that doesn't matter. Like I want to talk about football. I want to talk about, you know, that's all narrative bullshit, which we've obviously been peddling in to start the show. But Paris Johnson's so good. I'm so looking forward to the matchups. And I wonder how Robert Saleh handles that. Because, yeah, you don't want Bosa on Paris Johnson. But also, like, you're not worried that much about that.
Right.
And then, okay, now do you want Mikel on Paris? Like, what does that look like? How do they play that ball game where you're actually going up against, for the first time all year, an elite-level tackle? And the interior is still pretty soft, and we saw the inverse of that in week one. I thought the interior for Seattle was really good, and Gray Zabel's going to be a perennial all-pro, perhaps starting this year. He's so goddamn good. Last week with Cesar Ruiz, you got the opposite end of the spectrum there. And this week, it's somewhere in the middle. I don't love it. I don't hate it. So how does Robert mix up his fronts there to handle it? If Paris Johnson does get the better of Mykal Williams and is able to do, you know, stop him from doing what he's done in his first two NFL games, if we see rookie warts, rookie bumps, that's a big deal for the Niners because this guy's apparently holding the whole damn ship together.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the Cardinals have the second quickest time to throw at 2.5 seconds, and then the highest time to allowing a pressure. So, like, there hasn't been much. And again,
that's
some of that
Kyler.
Can be tough.
That's
I
totally
know, Kyler. I know. I was going to say, some of that's tough to calculate because Kyler's just scrambling. God, I hate that. I hate that so much. Yeah, but it also is, like, a small sample size. But, like, yeah, he's either getting the ball quick or out or just scrambling for it.
Well, they're doing really short ADOT. I mean, they are not bothering to throw the ball down the field. They also don't throw it over the middle. So all it is screens, yeah. Trey McBride turning around and standing in the middle. Just
or some, like, 50-50 balls to...
These boys love the flat. They can't get enough of it. They're out here saying no drumsticks, only flats on every single snap. But let me throw you a quick stat here. Okay, so this is the great Oz that is @football_insights, pulling the NFL faster data and amalgamating it with PFF. he puts out, or she, you never know these days. They put out a big chart, and this one is at least partially responsible is the title. And if I was a better host, I would have this up on our screen right now, but I'm not. And it's team offense allowed by pressure dropbacks. And Kyler Murray is, you know, everyone's getting pressure dropbacks. If you look at Brock Purdy, he had one game, 50% of his pressures. Here's the thing, keeping the faith. Literally just thought that off the top of my head. That's the kind of genius/stupidity you can expect from Dieter Kuerten.
All right, sorry, I interrupted. Continue.
I did write down several times the flats. I never put it together until this moment. Brock Purdy, 50% of his pressures in week one were from left tackle. We knew that. We saw that. That's how it happened. Okay, so Kyler's got two games here. He is most responsible for the pressures on him. He's the only quarterback on this chart who... It's not his offensive lineman's fault. 33% of his pressures are his fault, according
to this
chart.
That's an awesome figure.
I've never seen that before in my life. The only other player who's even close to that is Justin Herbert, who is a notoriously light-footed guy. You know, he's a little not the greatest pocket sense. I mean, he's ripping it. He's doing awesome. By the way, Brock Purdy, none. Absolutely none of his pressures were attributed to his. So... or to himself. So just something to keep an eye on. Like, Kyler, because we talk all the time about Purdy not being able to see it and being six foot, and he's open about this, right? Like, sometimes he just has to throw it to a spot and hope it works out because he just can't see over his line because he is, by classical standards, itty-bitty. Imagine what it looks like for Kyler Murray. I mean, it's just...
You can see him not being able to see it.
And it's why he doesn't throw over the middle, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later on in the show. And when he doesn't see it, when the stuff on the flats is taken away and he doesn't throw over the middle, what's he going to do? I'm going to do it one more time and then I'm going to retire it.
God, please stop.
It's done. It's over. It's over. I'm scaring people away from
it. Oh, God.
Jake, I have a prediction for you.
Okay.
I think that the Niners' three safety look is going to be better than the Cardinals' three safety look in this game. So the Cardinals, famously, three safety defense. Now, it is actually not as prevalent, and especially you look at the Carolina tape, not as prevalent as people make it out to be, but they do play three safeties, and like true safeties, a three stack on the top.
Yep.
More than
Baker, Thompson, Taylor Demerson.
Yeah. They do it more than really anybody. And the theory behind that is, okay, they're getting really multiple up front. They've put in some nice capital and thought into their front seven this year. But last year, they would do the three safety look, and they would basically run the Brian Flores chaos front, but they'd run it as a chaos back.
Yeah, well, it was interesting last year where they just didn't have the dudes, but they were running chaos, and it sort of worked, sort of didn't, but like... It was unpredictable enough that like teams didn't really know what to expect. It seems like they've calmed down a little bit early on.
And that's to be expected because now they can get crazy up front too. And having Josh Sweat out there really changes the dynamic big time. Having Calais Campbell in there, who is still giving dudes the business, he is still awesome, albeit on limited reps.
Dalvin Tomlinson, who's just a large, large man.
I so enjoyed the Dalvin Tomlinson tape. Couldn't really get enough of it, if I'm being honest.
They also have Jordan Birch, who's not had a lot, but like is sort of that in-betweener guy. And this is without, who am I?
Well,
the defensive tackle they draft, Walter Nolan, that we talked about all summer long.
And you can see where Nolan fits into this so much because you have a couple of guys who are just, and they're running that tight front that the Saints were running, that 4-0-4. They did that a lot against Carolina. And and albeit that's the right quarterback to do it against, they still do some read option stuff with Carolina, all that jazz. But you have a lot of guys who are capable of playing that 1.5 gap, right? Not just, you know, Tomlinson, but Darius Robinson, MIZ, go beat South Carolina this week. And then obviously Campbell, who's like the poster child for that. The strong,
right.
They have a bunch of strong side defensive ends and really good tackles. What they don't have is gap splitters. They don't have a gap splitter that they can throw in there on the four-man front every now and again and just get the hell home. And Walter Nolan would be so good in this front, and it's not there. But they're getting crazy up front, okay? And
yeah, it's the looks are very different. Sometimes you're getting three, sometimes you're getting four, sometimes it's five. Like, and sometimes you can't tell. Again, it's not as disguised or as insane as it was last year, but
you still have Buda Baker mugging in the A gap and then shooting out to be a cover two corner, right? Like that kind of stuff is still happening. Right. I don't know how much of that they're going to be willing to do because Will Johnson is out, and you need great corners to be that chaotic in the middle. And I don't know if Will Johnson's a great corner, but he's certainly an upgrade over whomever else they're
playing. He's been great early.
Yeah. But Max Melton sounds like he's going to play, and Max Melton is kind of a versatile player like this where you can line him up as a linebacker.
He's a shitster, man.
He's awesome. He's really good. He's so good that they looked at Bo Melton, and they said, well, your brother's a good corner. You should play corner. Like, you can do that, and he's doing that.
Is that true? Bo Melton's playing corner?
They shifted Bo Melton to corner in Green Bay. Green Bay is so goddamn good that they took one of my favorite players in the league and just said, you do something different now, like they were playing an NCAA dynasty in 2013.
Real quick, they're not blitzing a lot. 14% blitz rate is third lowest in the league.
Blitz rate's tough, though, because they do a five-man front, and it's like, is that not a blitz? Is it a blitz over four? Is five-man a blitz? And blitz rates are about to get really wonky because this five-man front is going to be ubiquitous. This defense,
but it's more four-man than it was last year so far.
They did a lot of four-man against Carolina, and like you can really only watch the first half of the Carolina game to get any read because they were kicking Bryce Young's ass so goddamn hard. Yeah. They took the foot entirely off the accelerator.
They let themselves get like death by a thousand cuts, like over the middle of the field. They said, all right, anything deep we're going to cut off, take 7 yards and seven yards and 7 yards.
And then 12 penalties in that game. A lot of them were
ugly game.
Ugly football game. So happy I didn't watch
Also, that. Though, Denzel Burke, kind of a liability.
Totally.
I didn't like him.
That.
Yeah.
No, I was not the biggest fan, but they kept putting him out there, and I'm like, you don't have anyone better than that. And like I'm not judging on names. I'm not judging on priors there. You just watch him and you're just like, I don't know. But let's get into why I think the Niners aspect of this, and we're just going to go right into DA's comment.
Did he say that?
Oh, did he ever? So we're going to give the full backstory here. Jair has said things like this to me before. Okay. Where we've talked about this. Jair has a very high opinion of himself, and we have constantly chalked it up, as you have to play defense in the NFL. It's kind of like being a quarterback in the Mina Kimes line. You either have to really believe in God or think you are a God.
Right.
I think that safety probably needs the same thing because it is such a ridiculous position to have to play at the NFL. Jair Brown, and by the way, Steve Wilks did not help this because he did kind of hammer this point home where he's like, you can be a top five guy. You can be a top five guy, which is what you tell a rookie when you're trying to build them up. Jair Brown believes that he's a top five safety. I would say on the 49ers, he says in the National Football League. So he has said things that are very close to this to me in the past. I have held that back from being published because you don't want to dunk on a dude just sort of doing football confidence.
Right.
Now, he told Eric Branch this on the record. Eric Branch is an incredibly reputable guy, right? Brancher's as clean cut as they come. He's not looking to burn anyone. He doesn't have agendas. Yep. This quote comes, Brancher's a good journalist. He should have no qualms whatsoever about publishing that quote. And so he publishes the quote. So now I get to do the jokes, which is, no, you're not. Come on now. Come on now. I get to say all the things in the back of my head that I've been holding back for a couple of years now and was waiting until he got cut to finally publish.
It's particularly like crazy to say that when you're not a starter on your own team.
Unbelievable. And it shows why Jair has had so many struggles in trying to find a spot and find a role, because he's got the Jonathan Kuminga complex. He thinks that he's the dude, and the systems and
also,
the world has said no.
Very brief aside, Kuminga's agent just like doing like a media tour while Kuminga's working out in the background. Very strange. I know this is a brief Warriors aside, but like, what the fuck is that about?
It's called Jonathan Kuminga's my biggest client. That's what it's called.
And, but like, I don't think I've ever seen like an agent being like, so yeah, you know, I mean, does he want to be on the Warriors? Not really. But you know, maybe we'll do a sign and trade. Maybe we won't. While he's like, it's so bizarre. If you have not seen it, he's doing this weird media tour today.
He did Steinmetz. He was on Hoop Collective this morning.
NBC Sports too.
Yeah.
So strange.
He didn't want to come on this show. neither here nor there.
Maybe he could play safety.
Well, okay.
No.
And this brings me back to actually the very positive thing I wanted to say about the 49ers that I refused to say out loud up until this point. They found a role for Jair Brown, and it's a damn good one. And they're calling it Big Nickel. I asked the question, is it Big Nickel, or what are we calling this? They're calling it Big Nickel.
Right.
It's three safeties. And Jake, I'll ask you this, because I'm pretty sure you've charted Jair Brown coming out of that game against the Saints. Do you seem to recall the personnel packages that the Saints had on the field when Jair Brown was on the field?
It was tight end. What was it, 21?
12.
12, sorry. I meant, you know, dyslexia.
It's okay. You don't need to apologize for that. We're talking about 12 personnel. We're talking about the all-holy 12 personnel.
It's Big Nickel, but it was base.
It was exclusively 12 personnel with 1-13 personnel. Do you know who runs more 12 and 13 personnel than any other team in the NFL?
Yeah.
The Arizona Cardinals. Fucking Cardinals.
And it seems like Tip Ryman's going to be healthy. It seems like he's coming back.
My sweet boy, Tip Ryman. What could have been? You wouldn't have had to pay Luke Farrell.
Who there's suddenly like kind of a hive about, you know? There's suddenly like a...
Y'all don't get him. He was mine first. Stay away from my man, Tip Ryman. No one runs more 13 personnel than the Cardinals. They run a shit ton of 12. They are, despite the size of their quarterback, a power football team. They got some fucking horses on this squad. I think that Jair Brown is going to be in there early. I think he's going to be in there often. I think that Robert Saleh was kind of testing out something against the Saints that he knew he would have to do against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And I liked what I saw from Jair Brown basically playing Sam linebacker. I think that the 49ers' three safeties on the field is going to be better than the Cardinals' three safeties on the field looks.
I love that prediction. I think that's – listen, I think if that's the role for Jair, it's great, because I think when Mustafa comes back, that role remains and Pinnock goes to the bench. That's how I think that'll work itself out. And then you've got like a lot of flexibility in that secondary room. You don't really have much. God damn it.
That's on me for doing tropes. Does Jair consider himself to be a revelation, Nevin 12:21? Sure. It's right, because I'll say this. This is not a prediction. Pinnock has looked susceptible. Let's put it that way, which is understandable. I
mean, he's right. He's looked like what I expected Jason Pinnock to look like, where you're like, oh, I didn't really notice him. Oh, that wasn't great. And then like by game three, you're like, it's probably time for the Jason Pinnock thing to be more of a special teams guy, you know?
Yeah. This is a good point by Nevin. This is something that I've certainly struggled with, right? Big Nickel against James Conner would be quite the choice. First off, I hate to report this, but I think James Conner, and this clip it, just clip it right now. I think James Conner might be washed. I think it might
That man is taking a lot of contact.
He's been through a lot, and I'll just go right into the next prediction. I think this is the Trey Benson game. Now, that is certainly Dieter going on his priors. I was the big Trey Benson guy 2 years ago in the draft, but Trey Benson has looked way better as the running back in the Cardinals system. And it's not like he's some small dude here.
Right.
But that one and go is really... Hold on. Are we talking sharks in here? No. We're pulling it back. What? Are we talking sharks? Bay Area, please. This is Benali. Great commenter. Thank you, Benali, for watching. Bay Area Sports playing a game of hot potato on who wants to be the most unserious, and somehow the sharks are coming out looking out best. Okay. We're going to ignore the first part because we don't have enough time. The second part is I spent the day with the sharks yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Dieter was down at San Jose.
They're going to win 10 more games. They're still not going to compete for the playoffs, but I dig it. And, you know, Lee Ving's right. Hockey tickets are very expensive, but we'll talk about that.
We're just talking about going. It was funny. I looked at tickets. I'm like, ooh, $8 preseason.
Should that be the fan appreciation day? Should we all just go to a Sharks game together?
Ooh, maybe.
If you live in the Bay Area, just email us.
We should all get sicko shirts. We get a sicko section.
Just a sicko takeover of the tank.
Anyway.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. I think it's time for me to get another prediction in.
Yeah, James Conner might be washed. I think this is the Trey Benson game, and I don't think that's good news for the 49ers. But playing big nickel against Conner, the challenge is, okay, yeah, you're playing big nickel against Conner. That's not ideal, but you're also, you can't play base against these tight ends if they go out and try to catch some pass. Like, you can't have Trey McBride being guarded by Luke Gifford. So this is the happy medium. Yeah. I think this is what Robert Saleh was experimenting about. We could all look like assholes, but here we go.
Yeah, it's I'm gonna move on to my take because I'm overdue for some takes.
Just you wait, Dieter's, Gabe.
Dieter's got lots of thoughts on Michael Mesa.
Do I ever?
Two years, they're gonna be firing. Yeah. Okay. I think the offense gets stuck in gear for about half of this game.
It's a great prediction.
I think the run game looks a little iffy. I think there's some times where the Cardinals' front gives them a little trouble up the middle. Looks a little bit disjointed, inconsistent. Not terrible, but like, what are we doing here? We're just kind of wasting a lot of time.
Can't really run it. Can't really separate. Just three and outs, six and outs, never getting past midfield. I know exactly what that looks like. How much of that is dependent on quarterback and which quarterback plays?
It's a great question. It's an excellent question. I think, can I say either quarterback?
Saucy.
I think where if they play Brock, he's like not quite comfortable with all his bind time and all that, tries to keep it simple, thinking about it a little too much. Mm. And second game, Mac just isn't quite the revelatory Mac.
They got away with so much against the Saints. And it's, again, not to take away anything that they did well, but the Saints don't have the pass rushers that the Cardinals and the Saints are running a lot of the same stuff. Now, the back end's different, okay?
Yeah.
But, like, when you're talking about that front five, when you're talking about that tight front, like, T-I-T-E, tight front, 404.
Thank you.
They're running the same stuff. The difference is they're coming at you now with Xavien Collins, Baron Browning, Mac Wilson blitzing, who's really good at
blitzing. They've got a lot of, like, big athletic dudes. My guy, Akeem Davis-Gaither, who's, like, in the middle for them as a linebacker, rangy, athletic, strong.
But also Josh Sweat. Who they
Josh
ran.
Sweat. Josh Sweat's an incredibly underrated, like Montez Sweat. I don't think they're related. I think, right?
Just Sweat
two big dudes. Yeah, they just do really well, and they're underrated in the run game. It's like if you're an edge who's like a strong run game player who's really athletic, like you don't get as much shine, but like he's a really key player.
He's a really good pass rusher too, and they ran a really cool stunt with him early in that Panthers game. Where they just brought, you know, the tight front, right? So you're eating gaps, and he just came around the backside and killed Bryce Young. I mean, he was dead.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he was able to get up.
Yeah, and Bryce Young's had some moments. I think he's slowly turning a corner. He's fighting for his life out there, but he makes some nice throws.
Fight for life.
The other part of that prediction is that I think Kendrick Bourne will have a key catch followed by a massive Ricky Pearsall chunk play to snap them out of that.
Wow,
it'll be like two quarters of the doldrums and then, okay, we're alive again. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Next prediction before, and then I'll bring it back to
Lay
you.
It on me.
Eight plus combined catches for the tight ends, Luke Farrell and Jake Tonjes, some check down action where it gets ugly and dicey. And then especially in the second half, Niners are trailing a little bit. Get some check downs. There's lots of space for check downs. underneath, and if it's Mac especially, he loves those tight ends.
I'm fascinated to see how Pearsall performs in this game because it should be an almost exclusively zone game. Like, the Cardinals both cannot and will not play man-to-man. Like, it shows up every now and again, but, like, they're not built for it. Their system isn't
it's about it's that. A lot of they can play a little he loves, like, cover four man match where it's like triangles on either side of the field, and then depending on the route concept, Flores. One guy takes them and they hand it off. But it's not like true man the whole time.
No. And that would be dangerous. Just, I mean, if you had Johnson, you can get away with it a little bit more, but you're just not doing that with Melton. You're not doing that with Burke. You're just not doing that. And then the three safeties doesn't lend itself to that. Now if you were to go all out blitz, then you really don't have a choice, but they don't run a lot of cover zero either. So I'm really interested to see how Ricky gets through the connective tissue. And if he's the one who can Debo this situation, for lack of a better term, if he can find that gap, catch the ball and go, maybe I'm just going to say, throw the prediction out there, but big yak game for Ricky Pearsall, which kind of is necessary. Cause do you think Jennings goes? I know that they'll have an injury report.
I kind of don't think so. I kind of think he takes the week and Kendrick Bourne gets the start. And then we get like one deep shot to Marquez Valdes-Scantling that he drops.
That sounds so
where it's going to be like, oh, what a breakup. Oh, actually that landed in his hands and the corner did not touch it.
Okay. Who do you think starts at quarterback?
I think it's Mac.
You think it's Mac?
I think it's Mac. I think they say Purdy's iffy. He's still hurting. And this is going to be kind of a physical game and he might take some shots. Kind of don't want that. But listen, like I feel maybe 60% Mac, 40% Purdy.
I have a prediction that is fundamentally built to piss people off. You ain't getting your Jordan Watkins. You're not getting him. He ain't showing up anytime soon.
Well, he tweaked his calf. Yeah.
Well, yes, he was on the injury report after practicing full on Wednesday. Limited or just straight up out on Thursday?
Limited, which means like he probably started, then got hurt.
So that even aside, they traded for Kendrick Bourne. Like, that told you kind of where they were at. Well, yes, sorry, you're right. They signed him. That is 100% accurate.
They thought about trading for Kendrick Bourne for like 3 years in a row, though. So
the amount of conversations that I have had about trading for Kendrick Bourne in August have not fully dumped themselves from the brain. They unquestionably acquired Kendrick Bourne for a sum of money that is still yet to be fully determined. Jordan Watkins ain't coming. I know that he's sort of the darling of, we've all moved on from Nick Martin to now Jordan Watkins. It ain't happening. So just quote Nick Saban. So stop asking.
And I liked what Jordan Watkins showed, but rookies get hurt and he hasn't been out there, and it's Shanahan doesn't trust rookie wide receivers as is. And the longer it goes and the Marcus Robinson's in the mix
right now, right down.
Where is he going to get snaps?
And also in theory, I mean, yes, he looked good in preseason. Danny Gray also had a touchdown catch from Trey Lance in a preseason game. And we all thought it was going to be great. I understand the preseason does tell you something, but it can also lie. It can also lie. It's like a three-year-old. Sometimes it tells the truth and sometimes it lies. Either way, it's very loud and kind of difficult to comprehend. I just don't think we're getting Jordan Watkins. I hope we're pleasantly surprised, because if he is on the field, then he should be able to do all the things that we think he can do, because Kyle is seeing it in practice. Yep. But this is like my number one thing when it comes to, like, why isn't this guy playing? I don't know. There's 6 days in between football games where the coaches go and watch them play football. Like, do you not think that they want to play their guy who was drafted in the third round as a linebacker? You don't think they want to play him? Oh, no, we don't actually want to use that guy that we drafted at pick 75.
Are you saying you think they have not been impressed by Watkins?
Well, I don't think they've had enough opportunity to be impressed by Watkins because of the injury. And I don't think that he's going to get the benefit of the doubt because they've already replaced him on the roster, in effect. If it's bad luck more than anything else, but also I don't think he's made the most of the opportunities that he has been out there, the time he's been out there, because they're like, we need to go get Kendrick Bourne.
It's so tough because this is like the perfect week for him to like get his one chance before Robinson comes back and having a calf injury. I just can't imagine he's going to be out there. So it's going to be Sky Moore and Marcus Valdes-Scantling. And
I'm not so sure about the Sky Moore thing, having watched that Saints film now a couple of times where he's out there and you're like, nope, never again. Nope, you Junior Bergened yourself right off the field there, Bubs.
Hey, maybe Junior Bergen gets bumped up.
Jesus fucking Christ. You have any other predictions, Jake?
I do. I think, yeah. Okay, I have two more. One, there will be one collision between Alfred Collins and James Conner that will register on the Richter scale.
Nice. That is a big, beefy man going up against a very hard block of concrete.
A lot of head-to-head contact on that one.
Yeah, probably not great. Great. NFL is not going to put that on the highlight film. That's why you can't do jacked up on Monday Night Countdown anymore.
Yeah. Did you see the Rams equipment guy getting a helmet on Steve Smith? It's very interesting. They've got like...
Oh, the dots and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't really watch the Steve segments. I'm not a big Steve Smith.
Oh, no. He's sometimes he's good, and then sometimes you're like, okay.
I'll tell you, if we're talking about behind the scenes, no one's doing the behind the scenes videos better than the Chargers. Like, it's amazing how much money you can
put in. Yeah, because they don't want any... Herbert wants no attention, so it has to be behind the scenes.
It has to be behind the scenes. It's but they have this unbelievable new facility down in L.A., and even my wife's like, it's amazing how nice of a facility you can build when you don't have to pay for your brand new stadium. They pay $1 a year in rent because that was the deal that the NFL made with Kroenke. Yeah, you want to build your stadium? That's fine. You have to take this kid in, the Chargers. So the Spanos family immediately then starts spending money on Jim Harbaugh. They start spending money on Justin Herbert, and they spend $150 million on an unbelievable facility, and they hired a hell of a social team to put it all out there. So the Chargers behind the scenes content, really good stuff, and they had the dot helmet, like what goes into becoming a rookie. So I do recommend you watch that after this video.
You have any other predictions?
I'm just going to go into our wild prop. This is the crazy thing that we cannot be held accountable for in a court of law. All these other predictions can make us look like assholes, and we'll wear it, okay? But if this doesn't pan out, you cannot come back at us. I think Jordan James and Christian McCaffrey share the same backfield. I don't know how many snaps.
I almost made a Jordan James prediction, but he's been inactive, and it's like a special teams question. It's like... Could they just be sick of Garendo and his terrible kickoff returns and say, we're going to have Brian Robinson Jr. return kicks?
I mean, maybe. Or James.
And block for Sky Moore? Or just have Sky Moore return the kicks and have Brian Robinson Jr. as the...
Functionally, I don't think that you can get away with a singular returner anymore because of the directional nature of the kicks.
Correct.
Is actually kicked in this year, pun intended. But it wouldn't shock me
You could
at
also
all.
Just put Jordan James back.
That's my thought. That they're just going to say, we're done with Garendo.
I almost made a Jordan James gets his first offensive snap prediction. So I like where your head's at.
I'm even further. I'm saying that when he's on the field as part of a special package where he is sharing the backfield with Christian McCaffrey, and we've talked about
this.
Oh,
yeah, and we got no fullback. We got no Juice, possibly.
We'll
likely.
See.
Maybe.
We'll see on that one. It's Tonjes as H-back, and it's tricky because you do want to do some 12 personnel. But it might have to end up being 21 personnel that looks like 12, and that's okay. You actually need those chess pieces to move to kind of counter what Arizona's doing. But I am we went back in it, chaos defense, right? Certainly Arizona qualifies as that. We went back into the film room to see when we were talking about Brian Robinson and Christian McCaffrey and how they would play together. Went back to see if Christian McCaffrey has shared a backfield with any – back other than Juice or Debo, and frankly they used Kittle a little bit in kind of a T. And the only guy that he's done it with was Elijah Mitchell. And Jake, did not care for this. You probably still don't care for this, but my comp for Jordan James was the Elijah Mitchell copy.
It's wrong.
Okay,
but
that's fine. I think that's how they see it. And so
it's not the same speed anyway.
I think that they want to use him the same way because it's the one trait that they think really matters is the ability to squeeze through small windows in the run game. And Elijah Mitchell was really good at that. He really had no problem creeping in through tight cracks. Let's all take a moment to laugh at that joke, which was not intentional. And thank you. That is what I think they see in James, that he can be sort of their Mitchell-like. And it's not like a thunder and lightning thing, but it's a different sort of player than they've certainly had with Mason and now with Robinson, which is, you know, battering ram, just knock the door down.
Yeah.
One of which can actually do it, the other one can't. You can be the judge on that one. I think that they bust out that look that they had against Minnesota 3 years
ago. Yeah, I'm really curious. Like, what is the because there's like a physicality to the Arizona front and the way Arizona plays football that would lend itself to like Brian Robinson Jr. being valuable, right? In theory.
I think the game of football would lend itself to Brian Robinson Jr. being valuable, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Correct. I think there's a physicality there that they might still trust him with. And so like my gut would say it's still Brian Robinson Jr., but my sort of galaxy brain is like, just make the switch and start seeing what happens, because you'd rather get James reps earlier than later. And you can keep them both active.
Yeah, I think that it's James replacing Garendo, and that they have a special package for Jordan James, where he shares the backfield with McCaffrey a couple times. And that gives them a little bit, and I know you're going to love this, gives them a little bit of a Veer look.
I love that.
A five-man front. Where you can, because you're going to have to move McCaffrey around. You don't have Kittle. Kittle is the kind of player that you need in a game like this, because he's multiple and he can attack in the weak points of this defense. You don't have that. And you're not getting it with Farrell, and you're not getting it with Tonjes, because they don't have the threat of being the thing that they're not.
Correct.
So in that, it's like, how do you get some chaos on your side so that this defense, which is going to rotate late, and it's going to make it really difficult for you to line up your blocks in a zone scheme, right? Because if you're rotating late, okay, well, I was supposed to get to the second level to block that guy, but who's supposed to do that now? Because he's not there, and this other guy came in here, and this is their real issue. It's the protection scheme, not on pass pro, but on running too. How do you get away from that? Well, you just attack it with your own sort of veer, and you kind of run an option with Mac Jones back there. Can't really do that with him as a runner. So you need to get another running back there, Jordan James. You can't hold me accountable, though. Can't hold me accountable.
Okay, I mean, if they do go that route, I do think what they do is they rip off what the Packers did, where they do the spin handoff.
100%.
And then it's unclear who has the ball for a split second. There's a little bit of deception there.
That is exactly right, Jake. Absolutely correct.
I don't think that happens, but I love where your head's at. I have one more prediction and then my bet for the game.
Okay, great. That's my bet. My bet is a Jordan James touch. If you can get a prop on that, go to town. if you can find a prop on that, I do have to question.
It's funny. There's all this gambling, and like you can't actually get the props you want. Because
no one knows who the quarterback is. But yes, correct. It's almost like it's rigged.
Prediction. Last prediction. Bounce back game for Renardo Green. Gets a pick or a tip to Marquis Siegel pick on a jump ball for Marvin Harrison Jr.
I like that one. You said that Connor and Collins were going to run into each other, and it was going to be big. I think that Kyler, and I won't do the laugh, is going to get out, and he's going to make Fred and Bosa run into each other really hard. Like, hard. That's not a great prediction, it feels bad to say. But the Niners have been kind of running into each other a little bit on defense, and I think that's kind of a good thing. It implies that there's a bunch of guys who can make the play. But I am sorry. I really need to just put the chat away. You guys are too funny.
We'll read that in a second.
We'll put it up in a second. But I think that Fred and Bosa are both so intent and capable of making the play by themselves that they actually run into each other and don't make
it. It's a great prediction. My last bet. What I really wanted to bet on, because it was overtime at plus 800, which honestly I would like the number to be a little bit higher.
Right.
But I wanted to bet not just overtime, but on a tie, which I couldn't find that. I could only find first half, end of game tie. But if you can somehow find a tie,
end result tie,
that's got to be at least plus 2000.
Well, the line right now is Niners 2.5. I think that that's cake. I think that has Mac Jones built in on it. And we're not a gambling show, and we've never taken money from gambling, but I do think it's somewhat informative and, in this case, fun. Bet responsibly, all that good jazz. But 2.5, Arizona on the road. I mean, if I was to give advice on this front, I would say take the Arizona money line if Mac Jones is the quarterback. But that, I mean, that line is telling you that they don't see very much, if anything, between these two teams. And you know my thoughts on what's going to happen with ties this year. Might this be the first? Might it be the second of a weekend? Who's to say? But I think we get four ties in the NFL this year. And by the way, my prediction of 10 field goals above 60 yards in the NFL, that might happen by week five.
Yeah. I just think this is going to be like a weird grindy game where there's going to be some big chunk plays and some, like, maybe some doldrums. You never really know with the Cardinals.
Never know.
It's always a strange game. So as much prep as I've done looking at, you know, all their quarters and running man match and, you know, secondary and the fact that they're like, they run heavy front, you know, or big packages with their O-line and they love to get three tight ends out there occasionally, two tight ends, and they just have big wide receivers, but then like sometimes can't really move the ball because Kyler's not seeing it. It's just a strange team and they only attack the boundaries on offense and James Conner's not quite rumbling the same way. It's strange. You don't really know what to expect from them yet. It's something where you know they're a team that like really isn't going to do anything because Kyler is Kyler. And but they could be dangerous. Like they could win 10 games, right? They could absolutely win 10 games. And you're like, I don't know what this team is, but they're tricky.
I think that they're a playoff team that doesn't win any playoff games because of their quarterback. Like I am. These are
that
famous.
Sounds right.
These are famous last words. Like I just don't see it in Kyler. I don't see the growth. I don't see the maturity. Like I don't get it. I just don't get it. And I think that this team would be in a much better situation without him, because I don't think that he's giving you more than he takes at this point. And I still think statistically he'll get you a lot. But you drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. early. That's not to say that Marvin Harrison Jr. is more important than your quarterback, but like they don't work together. It's a bad mix. Marvin Harrison's skill set is slants and dig routes and over routes. And Kyler does not throw it there unless it's right at the line of scrimmage to a style. If you had a DK Metcalf or a George Pickens, kind of true X receiver, a Brandon Ayuk, if you had somebody like that who can give you those deep posts and stuff, now there's something different. But also Kyler doesn't throw it down there anymore. So he throws a lot of like one-on-one, 50-50 balls down the sideline, 15 yards down, and he hits the flats. And he'll hit you over the middle, but like only on super design plays. And it's just, I hate it. I hate watching it. And it feels like it's the limiting factor on this Cardinals team, whose defense is awesome, who I think's offensive personnel is really good. I'm expecting him to have a monster game because I just don't think he's very good. he's gonna absolutely break out in this one because I've said that the opposite will happen.
That checks out.
Should we go through some of the star chats, my friend?
Let's go through some comments. Kind of a funny question. Would 10 plays of edge shedding be equal to one sack value-wise? I think the number is much lower, and also a sack is like tough because sometimes you do all the work to get a sack and someone else gets it. But I think like a sack-worthy pressure. I would say, I don't know if there's a good number, but I think it's an interesting question. I think really setting the edge consistently versus like getting a one-off sack.
Right.
I don't know. I think I'd rather the guy that has more consistency, but it's like Bryce Huff who like is brought in for that one role. So it's like, I don't know how to answer that question, but it's a kind of an interesting thought.
Is it too low to say 5-1? Does it have to be 7.5? Because 10's too high. We all agree.
Ten's way too high. I was five. My head went to five, but it's not like a.
And then setting the edge, there's a difference between collapsing the pocket and
Are you just sort of standing there against like a tackle and like surviving, or are you like, you know, displacing the tackle a little bit? Then it's like maybe three snaps.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and how much is a run stuff versus a sack?
It's an impossible question, but I love the thought behind it.
It's such good thought. I mean, they used to set the edge with Eric Armstead. They would just line him up as a strong side defensive end and just say, like, just push from in there. This could be the Mikel game that makes him look like a rookie, to be blunt.
Sure. And Kyler's tough in space. Totally. Like he's got a lot of range, but he's not super fast. So there's going to be times where he's diving and Kyler's running past.
You know who's even tougher in space? Trey Benson.
Nah.
Big Trey Benson guy. This is the game if there ever was one for Trey Benson.
Benali asks, position by position on offense, do the 49ers have the advantage anywhere on the Cardinals? As it stands today with like assuming Mac Jones, no Kittle.
Yeah. They have an advantage with McCaffrey versus linebackers. Though they
at running back, them. I would say for sure.
I think that they have an advantage at de facto, because he's not really specifically there, but I think they have an advantage outside with Pearsall over these corners. And I like Milton a lot. But if you don't have Will Johnson, you don't have that guy.
I like Pearsall over any of the Arizona wide receivers. And depends what version of Trent you're getting, but you'd say Trent still.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the defense is so scheme dependent. That's the thing. Like, it is a sum of the parts. They have a bunch of really good players. Buda Baker is as good as it gets. Like, I'm not taking anything away from the really good players they have on the defense, but stack them up individually. Mac Williams, their linebacker, right? Am I getting that right?
It's
Neck Wilson.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you get it so close that you're like, what is his name?
Brutal. And I've messed that up five times today. And he's a senior, which is annoying. Like, I don't know your kid. Is your kid in the league? Then you don't need to differentiate yourself. Mac Williams Sr.
Wilson
Sr. It's as good as it gets right here. How about Mac is out there. He's a really good player in this system and this system alone. I mean, and it's replicants, which are going to be more plentiful across the league. But, like, him going left and right, no bueno. Him blitzing and being a de facto defensive end and kind of standing there and stuffing the run. Like, he's really, really good at that. He's insulated by this. They got a bunch of guys who fit what it is that they do to a T, Baker being the key amongst them, whom they inherited. They've now figured out, okay, this is what we like at this spot. This is what we like at that spot. And they've gotten guys to fill that spot. You know, Calais Campbell being a great example. Like, Calais Campbell, if you thought about him for the Niners, you're thinking one technique, three technique. Nah, he's a four eye. There has never been more of a four eye in the history of football than Calais Campbell, and he's as good as it gets there. So I really like this Arizona defense, but if we're talking, you know, man v man fantasy football style, it's a tough argument to have sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting that like they got Akeem Davis Gaither, who I really liked and talked about as an option for like $5 million a year, and he's just their starting middle linebacker. He's done a pretty good job. He's got range. He's got size. He was number three for the Bengals. And I was like him. It's like the same thing with our guy from the Jets, who's
Sherwood.
Yeah. Sherwood. Who's like now I think leading the Jets, which is like 13 tackles a game leading to nothing. Cause they're just like awful.
Their defense sucks. We don't need,
we have to go to probably the most ridiculous question we've all gotten.
It keeps happening. It keeps happening. Okay. No.
Do you think CJ West can play center? No.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'll expand. Hell no. He does have good hands.
Right, but it's like that's not what makes a good center, especially in this system. Like, he can't run, man. He's got some burst off the line, but like, he can't run. He can't, like, center's also a tiring job. Like,
he has powerful hands.
He's a phone
disengage from
tackle.
Blocks.
Yeah.
The whole point of playing offensive line is to block.
I'm not on board. We're not on board.
And you can make the argument of like a Ben Garland, like, well, he was a defensive tackle and they moved him to center. Yeah, but he was a shitty defensive tackle. Like, his whole thing was like, I think we can use him here because he's smart. And I'm not saying CJ West isn't smart. I'm not saying that he couldn't handle the mental aspects of center. I don't know him well enough to make that determination one way or another, but I'm not discounting it. He's a really good defensive tackle. I'll be clear about this. I think that CJ West, after his reps against the Saints, deserves more reps against the Cardinals. I think that he is an asset to this team. And
he'll listen. It's a long season. Defensive linemen go through a lot of wear and tear. He will find snaps and figure out a role. And if he plays well, he will get more snaps. That's how it will work. And they already increased it from last game. So yeah. it's interesting alone that they've just got Jordan Jefferson not really playing and they're trusting CJ West over him. Because that could have been a decision they easily made.
They do. Yeah. They kind of do that a lot. I think we're obviously in the belly of the beast. Like, it does feel like they make Kendrick Bourne is a good example, right? Like, we acquired this guy kind of for like a week, right? Like, best case scenario, you only need him for a week. Like, they go out and get Jordan Jefferson. It's like, what? You're just going to have him sit on the bench? They acquire a lot of guys that they then leave on the bench. Remember when they got, who was the other guy that they got? They got another Kalia. Was that it?
Khalil Davis, who they traded like a seventh round pick for, and then like maybe never played or played like one game, and then they cut.
Not a person, Khalil Davis.
Well, it was because they had a streak of making trades at the deadline. They're like, we need a defensive tackle. Let's get a guy who has actually achieved nothing. And the Houston Texans, who had a dog shit defensive tackle group last year and were struggling, were like, you want him? And they went, sure. Here's a future seventh.
But I guess that does highlight, like, never give a shit about a day three pick. You can always get them, and you can always give them up. Maybe fourth round you get a little.
Even though they seem to, like, do better with seventh round picks than some third rounders.
That's because the pressure's not on there. The San Francisco Giants. You put the pressure on them, they can't perform. But as soon as it's like, hey, anything can happen out of here, they keep kicking ass. Okay, what else we have?
What else we got? Great question from Anali. Does Kyle know that there's new overtime rules? Excellent question. I think he does, but I think after the second possession where no one scores, he will be confused and be like, wait, what is it? What is it again? And
there will goal thinking we would win.
There will be a bad timeout burned because of like, what's the situation? Then he'll be like, well, we knew. And then you'll be like, oh, that explanation makes sense. And then you'll re-listen to his explanation and be like, oh, wait, that didn't make sense. And it'll be like, yeah, we had an issue there the second day. Anyway.
Yeah,
that's another prediction. What will the narrative be on Upton Stout after this game?
I don't think Upton Stout plays that much. I think they're in big nickel a lot.
Yeah, but he played in big nickel. Remember?
Well, he a little nickel.
Yeah, but no, but big nickel's still with Stout on the field.
Mm. So that's really like a dime situation.
Yeah, this Stout's been on the field. I think he's still playing. I think they're going to keep trusting him.
I think
especially
you only want to play him against 11 personnel. They just don't run that much 11 personnel.
I mean,
he'll
we'll
be on
see.
There for those reps, but
it'll be interesting because, like, I don't know, Michael A. Wilson's like a big, wide, big slot. Like, it's not
everybody
an ideal game for him.
Everybody on that team is a power. At
everyone's large.
Is.
It's not an ideal game for him.
Cardinals for years, I think, to kind of acquiesce to Kyler is like, oh, we have this little scooty quarterback.
Let's get big guys around him.
Let's get really small. They originally started with really small guys around him.
Yes.
And they had somehow wide receiver, like
Christian
Dortch
Kirk
existed.
And Dortch. And yeah.
And they just had all these little guys. And it was Cliff Kingsbury, right? Like, we're just going to beat him with speed. And then you found out that that's not how the NFL works. And Jonathan Gannon comes in and he's like, we will insulate the little man with all of the girth and all of the power. Everybody on this team is powerful. And that's why that's why it's a really great test for the Niners defense. They have not faced this kind of force before. Like, I thought the Saints did a nice job game planning. I think that the Seattle offensive line is ascendant, but it was early and they were all figuring their stuff out. Like, they have not taken this kind of a punch in the mouth, and every single snap from the Cardinals is going to be a punch. They are
big boys.
I don't know if they have Stout out there.
He will. He'll be out.
Okay. I think he has fewer snaps. Let's put it that way.
I agree. I think it's going to be a major challenge for him, and he's going to have to like cut guys off the kneecap. Mm. Like, he's going to have to get in low.
Yeah. How about this? If he plays, there's definitely going to be an injury timeout for him. I'm not wishing actual ill will upon him. He might only miss a snap, but like, he's getting the win.
Going to need a sack
this game. Yeah.
Luke Gifford going against your big nickel prediction will play a huge role, because like, that's the other thing is you could say, all right, well, they had big nickel last game, and so they could go back to it to sort of match in the pass game. But in the run game, with all that physicality, wouldn't you want Gifford out there? I'm very curious to see what they do. I think they and you know what you could do is you could say, all right, no Stout, but you replace Stout with Jair and you put Gifford out there in base.
You could do that. That's a thought. My thought on why I don't think Gifford plays is because they don't really put Trey McBride in line all that often. So yeah. they're in 12 or 13 personnel, but he's in the slot. He's playing.
Or he's the last tight end on the line.
Right. He's playing Travis Kelce football. It's not true tight end. And that's not to take anything away from him. He's a hell of a receiver. But you're also not that concerned about him in the run game. He gives up a lot in the blocking game. He's always complaining that he's being defensively held. It's really annoying.
Yeah. But if you don't have Stout out there, who's gonna do the little man QB spy on Kyler?
I mean, I do want to see some little on little crime. I want to see the itty bitty boys go at it. And
D Winters, here's another prediction: is going to have like one where he completely flies by Kyler, and totally whiffs, and he's going to have there's going to be some towards the boundary where everyone's going to be holding their breath that he's going to murder him and get ejected from the game, but it will be warranted. Nevin asks, do you think if guys stay healthy, they will trade, I almost called him Ezekiel, Jordan Elliott to make room or for more snaps for the kid and or so they can activate Givens, who they made a point of leaving open on the return from IR designation? I don't think they will because Elliott, I think, is a free agent after this year. Mm-hmm. And they love the comp picks.
Wouldn't that? Well, yeah, that's a good point.
And he's actually been playing well so far, which I did not like him last year, but he's been doing well so far.
Well, and it makes sense, right? He's been in a limited role. You haven't needed the full Jordan Elliott experience. When you only play him a little bit, that's cool. Like, he gets by. So that's
good. And they've had Davis as the real penetrator to get upfield, and Elliott's taking on more double teams and sort of holding up. I don't know if that's been dictated to him, but like he's been playing better because it seems like the game has been a little bit simpler for him.
The correct answer to this question, and we'll see. I mean, the correct answer, but kind of a Hanlon's razor argument. Let's call this a Hutch's razor here. These things take care of themselves. It is professional football. And the idea that you're ever playing with a loaded deck is one game away, or even for this Niners team, one practice away from feeling like the exact opposite. Just look at the wide receiver situation. I mean, it's a great case in point. You lose all your wide receivers in training camp to injury, and then come week 5, 6, and 7, you might have too many wide receivers. So these things take care of themselves. As they say in Jurassic Park, life finds a way.
Real quick before we get out here, let me answer this one because you're going to spaz out on the person. The 49ers, Dieter and Jake, act like they have all the answers. One, you are quite literally asking us questions, so we are answering them. that's the nature of the Q&A portion. And two, you asked us if we think CJ West could work at center. We said no. If you asked me if Sebastian Valdez could maybe work at center, maybe. I think he's got a more interesting conversation. He's got the athleticism for it. I think he could be an interesting conversion. But you asked about C.J. West, so I said no. So that's the nature of it.
Let's also throw this on C.J. West. A little too doughy for center, if I'm being honest.
I mean, in this scheme, at least, you got to get out and move. That's not really his game. He's a penetrator. He's got strong hands. You can spin off. So that's what it is. Again, you can keep asking questions. We'll give you the answers.
Here's the other fun part. You don't have to watch. You know, we do think we have all the answers. We're not going to lie. That's the whole ball game. That's
and here's the thing, when we're wrong,
media.
When we're wrong, like when I said Connor Colby's going to be terrible, and then he's actually been really good, I'll point that out. So
here's the thing, Jake, and I'm not trying to absolve ourselves from culpability here. What the hell is that, Connor? That's not the same player we saw.
No, I don't know what was going on in Iowa, man. And because they had a lot of athletic guys, and it was like, what is happening here?
Well,
it didn't look the same where you used to be able to look at them and you'd be like, it's a domineering offensive line, great tight ends. And you're like, I don't like any of this.
Well, his footwork was just such garbage. And this is pretty clear that, you know, I've done a lot of scouting and I've talked to a lot of coaches, but I've never been a coach at any level. But I've scouted and I found countless. I mean, I don't need to tell you my bona fides. You don't have to believe me. Doesn't matter. It was scouting brain as opposed to coaching brain. When you're in the 7th round, you need to have a little bit more coaching brain. unless you're going for that high upside athletic talent. But even then, like, you need to have coaching brain on, like, what does he do wrong? Because we're clearly getting him at a discount. We like a lot of, you know, these traits. Like, what does he do wrong? And in that, like, can I fix it? And Chris Forster looked at Connor Colby's feet and it's like, yeah, I can fix that. And he's right, because Connor Colby's footwork against the Saints was immaculate. And that was legitimately his biggest problem at Iowa. So, yeah, Chris Forster, if you're wondering why they don't invest in the offensive line, it's because they invested in that dude.
Listen, like, is he the greatest offensive line coach in the league? No. Jeff Stoutland has probably got that title unlocked. But in terms of getting, like, right, sort of below average or mediocre to, like, slightly above average, just functional, does a hell of a job at it.
Think about the line that they have. It's Trent Williams. Life is a lot easier when you go from Joe Staley to Trent Williams. No one's going to argue that. But this is the starting pitcher analogy that I like to use. Like, you need one good one and everyone else to just hold the line. Their left guard from here on out is a seventh round flyer who was in a camp battle with an undrafted free agent for a backup job.
Yeah.
Their center's a guy that they had stashed on the practice squad after being on other practice squads.
He played like 5 years in the league, just like not really playing ever.
Wandering the wasteland. Their right guard is a third round pick who we kind of thought they overdrafted, but they were like, no, no, no. And he started as a rookie. And their right tackle is a guy that they pulled up off their practice squad.
And was initially a guard, I believe.
That's correct.
Yep.
That's good offensive line coaching.
It is.
That's pretty good.
It's great. Last thing I'll hit before we get out of here, Matt Barrows. Not seen at the start of 49ers practice. Juwan Jennings, Trent Williams, Yetur Gross-Matos, Jordan Watkins, and Spencer Burford. We didn't mention that, like, you know, did they have a backup left tackle? You know, Austin Pleasance? Or I think what they would do in that situation is they would move McKivitz to left tackle and they would put Pleasance at right tackle. If Trent and Burford both couldn't go in that situation. I think Trent's going to play. It seems like no. I think that's what they would do in that situation. As you say, Pleasance, stick at right tackle. McKivitz, good luck at left.
Did they not play Pleasance at left tackle last year?
I think they did.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe they
did
that.
Anything that happened at the end of last year, but that's a really, I don't think they would move McKivitz off of right, frankly.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you don't want to screw up the footwork.
At this point in the week, I mean, we're not going to have to go full Buccaneers here.
I guess, like,
our center is now our left tackle and our left guard is now our center and I'm playing left guard. Like, it's some chaos over there.
Yeah.
And they're
be careful. Be careful on the field. If you go out there pregame, they might need you. They might go, is that Gray Zabel?
Look at the size of them. Do we have anything else, or do we want to just,
I think that's it.
Prediction?
I think we want to get out of here. Subscribe to the Hutch Report. I'll add that in the description. If you missed it, I have the offensive line, defensive line grades. Spent a lot of time, a lot of cool charts in there. Next week, I will have the season long grades updated. I feel like I wanted a longer sample size, and we'll have that every week. Lots of good charting. And then at the end of the game, we'll figure out when we're going to stream. But, like, if there's anyone you want me to do a grading on, I'm doing a different person every week in addition to the O-line and D-line, let me know at the end of this game.
Post-game, members only. Looking forward to that immensely. Jake, who wins by how much?
I think the Cardinals win by 4 points. I think the Niners go for two and fail at some point.
Interesting. I have a missed field goal in this game if we're going to get lucky with it.
Love it.
For the Niners. The problem is not gone. It was never Jake.
23-19, Cardinals win.
Ooh.
Okay. Actually, that's too low. I think it's, I'll say 29-25.
Okay. So my prediction is totally contingent, as we are booed. If Mac Jones plays, the Cardinals win. If Brock Purdy plays, the Niners win. All of our predictions well established in this year.
Yeah. By the way, this is the first prediction I've had that the Niners have lost. I've predicted them to win.
I've predicted them to lose every game. So you should be not booing me, sir. Awesome. All of you sirs and madams, stop booing me. I'm helping you. My power to jinx is reverse and powerful. Okay, Sunday, sometime after the game, we'll let you know, and looking forward to talking to you all then. Bye.
See ya. Sweet.